UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs? They're out there. Taking airplanes.
And it is such.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls.
Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. I hope you're all doing good. I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to the UFO Chronicles podcast. Tonight we have the pleasure of Hollywood actress Camille Harmon, and she comes to us from Los Angeles. And Camille will be sharing her abductions that occurred in the mid-90s that involved fetus removal, implants and a connection to the MyLab's Black Projects. Camille is a member of MUFON and wrote for UFO Magazine under Don and Vicky Eckler. As well as public speaking at UFO conferences, she is involved in documentaries and is the founding member of the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. Camille is up next. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Thank you for coming on today and you're calling from Los Angeles, California.
Yes, I am. La La Land. With the Santa Ana winds blowing 70 miles an hour today, it's been rough.
A rough day. Okay. Now, Camille, you have some experiences you're going to be sharing with us. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, ma'am?
Yes, I will gladly start at the beginning, although I don't know if it's really the beginning, but I can tell you it's when I came into the awareness of this phenomena in my life was in 1995. I was about, 29 years old, living in New Orleans at the time, and I had finished graduate school, getting my master's in theater at the University of New Orleans, and I had a boyfriend who was an actor. We were both hot stuff in New Orleans. And we had decided to move to LA after being in a production of Richard III and having a great time. He was playing Richard, I was Lady Anne, and we thought, let's go to LA and take on the world. So we did that. And we drove to LA with the U-Haul towing the car behind us. And we had our dog with us. And we spent a night in Sedona. Actually, we went camping along the way. So that was kind of weird. Maybe something happened there that started this whole ball rolling. So right before we had taken off on our trip, I had been compelled. I'm one of those people you hear about who was compelled to buy Whitley Strieber's book on the shelf at the bookstore. And this happened in about August of 95, right before we moved in September. And I had seen this book Breakthrough, and I knew a little bit about Whitley Strieber. And I just saw that alien face on the cover of this hardcover book. And I was like, oh my God, I have to get this book and see what this guy is writing about now, because I knew he had an earlier book, Communion, but I hadn't read it. And so I read this book, and it blew my mind and really introduced me to the world of UFOs. And I was hooked. I was like, oh my God, this is like the most important thing I've ever read. And it just really expanded my mind. So now we're in LA and we're settling into our house that we were renting, a beautiful house in Silver Lake with a great view of the sky. I remember actually walking up the steps and looking at the view from the living room with the landlord and saying, oh my God, this window is like perfect for seeing UFOs. Of course, I don't know why I said that, but I did. And I had an agent, I had a job, I had my SAG card. I was so excited to just begin my new life acting in LA, you know? So everything was going great, but then I started having all these weird physical symptoms in my body of being pregnant. And I had sore breasts, I had anxiety, I had heartburn, and I'd never been pregnant before that I know of, but I had no menstrual cycle, and I was taking the pill at the time, very regularly. And I remember in the past, if I was ever late on my cycle, I would just go to the drugstore and get a pregnancy test and take a pregnancy test and ease my mind and go, oh, good, I'm not pregnant, great. But I didn't do that. Like, I kept waiting and waiting and waiting, and I went months without any menstrual cycle. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, it's just stress. It's just because I moved. You know, sometimes that happens, right? And so in December, so we had been in there September, October, November, December, and we were walking our dog Opal one day in the neighborhood, and she saw these squirrels run up a palm tree and was barking at the top of the palm tree where they had a nest up there. And we were looking at that. And above that in the sky was a UFO, my very first UFO. And it was this black thing, very high altitude. I couldn't quite make out the shape, but it had like a shimmer around it. Like, it was black and maybe a triangle. I'm not 100%, but it had a shimmer around the edge. And my boyfriend, Eric, saw it too. And I remember him teasing me and saying, oh, you and your UFO books, you know, look, you're seeing a UFO. And I was like, I think we are. And we looked at each other, we made eye contact, and then we looked back at it and it was gone. And I mean, it was a bright blue sky and no clouds. And we had the palm tree for reference, and we were looking everywhere like, where'd it go? Where'd it go? It's gone. And then we got really excited. And I said, here, take the leash. I'm going home. I'm going to call it in. I'm going to report it. So I went home and I was on the phone with the guy. There was a phone number on the phone book, like UFO hotline. And I called, and it was MUFON. And I talked to this guy, Bill, and I told him about the UFO. And I don't know how far we got into the report, but, you know, I told him what I saw. And he said, oh, we have these monthly meetings, by the way, if you want to come. And I was like, oh, yes, I'm there. Tell me where I'll be there. So at the same time in December of 95, I had this weird night when Eric was in the living room watching a David Lynch movie that I didn't feel like watching because I knew it'd be gross. And I was sleeping alone. And I had this attack of sleep paralysis. And I had that before in my life, but this time it was really scary because I heard a voice say my name in what seemed to be from my left side, like an electronic sounding voice that just said my name. That's all it said. It said Camille, like a robot or like a computer generated voice. And then I had an image of a gun pointed at me, like a flash image of a gun pointed at me. And I was like, okay, what the hell was that? It was terrifying because I couldn't move. And later on, when Eric was in the bed with me sleeping, it happened again the same night. And I remember coming out of the paralysis, and this time I didn't have any weird audio visual thing, but I came out of the paralysis. I was moaning, you know, as I broke out of it, and it woke him up. And I remember him asking me, like, well, are you okay? And I was crying. So in January, my menstrual cycle came back, by the way. But then I started going to these MUFON meetings, and I saw Kim Carlsberg speak. And she blew my mind because she had a book out that Daryl Anka, who channels Bashar, had illustrated. And she was in showbiz as well as a set photographer on Baywatch, and she was living with this guy. He was like the director or producer or something of Baywatch, and she had this great life. But then she started having these abductions in Malibu at their house, or Pacific Palisades. I can't remember. I think Malibu. And this whole thing, you know, and I was so blown away by her story and her emotion. And I checked out her book at the back table, and it had a checklist in the back that was like, you know, you may have been abducted if, and it had all these things on this list. And I was reading this list and I was like, oh my God, I've had that. And I've had that. And I've had nosebleeds as a child, and I've had all these weird things on the list. And I was shaking, and I just knew, I was like, oh my God, I think I'm one of these people. And I was introduced to Barbara Lamb, who's a hypnotherapist for this problem. And I said, Barbara Lamb, hello, nice to meet you. I want to make an appointment to do a regression with you, please, about this night in December when I had these weird sleep paralysis attacks and saw a UFO. And let's do it. So we did. I had two incidents we investigated. Okay. The very first incident we investigated was not that night, actually. It was years ago, I think like around 1991, when I was living in Richmond, Virginia, sleeping at this dorm room, when I had this weird dream. In my memory, I had this weird dream. And in the dream, I was in a mansion with a film crew. I was part of the crew. I was walking through this rock star's house, like some generic rock star with long hair. He was leading us through his house through these various rooms, and he was like, okay, this is the studio and this is the living room. And then he goes, oh, and this is the satanic ritual room. And I looked in this room and there was like an altar and a, you know, it was like black and red or whatever. I don't know. I can't remember the room very much, but there was a mounted taxidermy goat head on the wall. And I remember the rest of the film crew kept walking, and I stayed in the doorway of that room. And I said to the room, to the general room, I said, in my dream, I said, I dare you to make yourself known to me. That's what I said in my dream. And all of a sudden in the dream, the goat head came alive and started making noise, like, blah, 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 you know, that goat noise. It's so scary. And at that moment, I felt this feeling in my solar plexus area of my body that my soul or my life force was being sucked out of me at a rapid rate, like I was going to die. And it all happened so fast. And I said, stop in the name of Jesus Christ. I was like in this realm. I don't know where I was, no longer in that room. I was like in this space-time realm when that happened. And I said, stop in the name of Jesus Christ. And it stopped. And I woke up and I heard wind chimes in this dorm room, you know, like outside. And it was like, what the hell was that? It was the most terrifying thing. So anyway, we targeted that initially in the regression because I was curious about that too. And I did get beings standing around me in this room with some kind of a tube stuck in my chest. And all I could see were their eyes, and they had these, you know, goat eyes or reptile eyes. They had weird irises. So that was a really scary thing. But then we targeted that night in December 96, and I had this terrifying memory of a typical alien abduction, right? I'm in my bed, I'm frozen, I can't move, and this light appears over me, this blue light that was like a turquoisey blue, and it was just really solid light. It wasn't like a normal spotlight that flares out. It was like a column of light, and it hit me, and I curled up into a fetal position in my memory, and I went through the ceiling in this fetal position, and I was terrified, and I was like, screaming up, 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 up. But I didn't see a ship though. Okay. This is where it gets weird. So I go through the ceiling. And then the next thing I remember is I'm on a table in a misty room. I can't see any walls or anything. There's just a misty white light everywhere. And I'm terrified. And I'm saying, everybody's looking at me. Everybody's looking at me. And Barbara says, who is looking at you? And I said, I don't know. And she had to make me look around. She goes, well, look around and see if you see anything. And I looked to my left and I saw this row of beings standing there. Like, I don't know how many there were, more than three. They all looked the same. They were white. They had white robes on with high collars. They had long sleeves. They had white, big white heads, the big black eyes, and they had something at their chest area that was like a triangle and a circle, some kind of emblem thing. And they were all standing next to each other with their arms down, they had really long arms. And I was just terrified. And she was like, you know, what do they want? What's happening? Because, you know, you're just laying there screaming, right? And the hypnotherapist has to like guide you through it because you're so emotional, you're not talking, and she doesn't know what's happening. So she has to say things like, okay, now what's happening? So I said to her, I said to Barbara, I said, they're telling me I have a baby and they want it. And I was just freaking out. So then my legs went apart and no one was touching them. And I felt really afraid because my body was moving not in my control. And then there was a being I could not see between my legs with a flash of this like gynecological instrument. And I knew that this being was going to put that in me. And I was freaking out. And she said, you can go above your body and remember it from above if that makes you feel less afraid or whatever, you know, more in control of the memory. So I like floated up above to watch it. And this thing that I could not see, this being that I could not see, put this thing in, this instrument in me and took it out. And there was something in the instrument through the slats that I could see that was like a little pink something. I cannot tell you what it looked like. I don't know if it was human or part human. It was very tiny. And the being walked out of the room with it. And I remember feeling this horrible grief. And I was so bereft. I was like crying and saying, they didn't even let me see it. And they just left. And I was just in agony. I must have lost 2 or 3 pounds in this regression, just crying and my teeth were chattering. And it was just utter terror. And it blew my mind. So, I mean, what do you do with that? You know, she gives me this little cassette tape with this horrible event on it. And I go home to my poor boyfriend and I sit him down and I make him listen to it. And he's hearing all this screaming and the teeth chattering and the wailing. And I mean, he looks at me like, holy crap. I mean, what is going on? What happened to my girlfriend, or what didn't happen to my girlfriend, and my girlfriend's crazy or what? Like, he didn't know what to believe. You know, it's so depressing because you feel like it felt so real. And yet when you try to share it with someone, they don't know what to make of that, you know? And we had been dating a long time, years. And he was like, oh my God, this is horrible. So, and then it just got worse because I was so obsessed and I was so talkative. And then it happened again. I had another incident when he was out of town. He went back to New Orleans for a film job of all things. And so he was gone for a week and I was sleeping alone. And I woke up 3 mornings in a row in July of 1996. And I saw my digital clock saying 400. And I was like, why am I getting up? I didn't hear a noise. What's going on? And the third morning of that, I got in the tub to shave so I could go to the beach and meet my friend. And I saw this bleeding triangular puncture array of like needle marks in the shape of a little triangle on my calf. And I was like, damn it, that is some alien thing. I've seen that in one of my books or some stupid show I recorded. And I was looking for it and looking, and I found it, picture like that in my book, some book I had. And I've since then met like 4 people have had that thing on different parts of our bodies. So I did another regression. This time I went to Yvonne Smith just to experiment with the other lady in town that was doing regressions. And I got aliens again. And this time the variety factor was I went out the window flat instead of through the ceiling in the fetal position. Same thing. The blue light floats me up. I turn. I go out the window. And then, boom, I'm on this table. Again, I don't remember UFO. I don't remember any kind of – I remember going through the window, and then I was on the table. But this time, there was one tall one with the white robes, and then there were these little 3 short ones with kind of wrinkly heads. And I couldn't see their whole bodies. I just saw the tops of their heads. They had these wrinkly heads, and they were like gray or brown or something dark. And I remember crying and saying, you make me scared of little kids – because you look like little kids, but you're not little kids. And I was a teacher at the time, and I had had this experience where these kids pulled me toward a cabinet. Like, a bunch of them came up and grabbed my arms and started walking me to this cabinet to get some paper. And like my body just went into this cellular memory of something similar to that happening. And I was like, oh my God, I have to hold it together in this classroom. Cause you know, it was a real deja vu kind of feeling. So when these little guys had me on the table in this hypnosis memory, and I'm yelling at them, the one closest to my head put its hand on my forehead. And I was like, get your creepy hand off me, you little bastard. And I'm cussing it out. But then as it put its hand on my head and started stroking my forehead, I like calmed down. It like melted my anger and my panic. And I just got really chill. And I mean, not chill, I'm happy, but it calmed me. And I just said, just do what you have to do and let me go home. And I was sedated somewhat. So then the tall doctor-y one with the white robes with the high collar and the big white head with the big black eyes and the beautiful long white fingers, he's reaching for the ceiling. There's a stuff in the ceiling like a wand on a some kind of a tubing and a rack with some tips. And he picks a tip and he puts one of these tips on the wand and he holds my leg. My left leg, he's standing on my right, but he reaches across, he holds my left leg, and he just pops that wand on my leg real quick, like almost like a vaccination or something. You know, that was all I remembered of that. I don't remember getting home, coming back, anything, just that procedure. And I did later work with the doctor and have the leg x-rayed. There was nothing in my leg, so that's why it seemed more like a vaccination kind of a thing, not an object being put in me. And then later I had gone to the dentist to get all my fillings changed out for the white, the nice white fillings. And I had all my old mercury fillings taken out. I loved my new fillings except for this one tooth. And I went to back to the dentist, a very nice dentist in Beverly Hills. And I said, you know, well, I told him this before he even did the fillings. I said, hey, by the way, I'm an alien abductee and I'm doing some hypnotherapy, and I've read a lot about this lately, and I've read that some people freak out in the dentist chair because they have flashbacks. And I said, that's never happened to me at the dentist before in my life, but I'm just telling you that, you know. And I said, oh, and by the way, if you ever find anything weird in my body, you have to tell me. And he was like, okay, well, I read a book about Roswell, so you know, I don't totally think you're crazy. Okay. And so anyway, he does all my fillings, and then this one filling hurt, and I go back, and he's like, well, it looks good. You know, the seal is good. I can redo it. So he redoes the filling and he finds this weird thing in my tooth that he had just worked on. He had just worked on that tooth a couple of months before. And now it's got this weird thing in it that he described as a spherical or semi-spherical object. And he wrote me a whole letter about it. And he was drilling and drilling. It was really hard. And he said, I can't get a chunk of this. It's powderizing, but it's super hard and it's going down the drain. And what do you want me to do? And he showed it to me in the mirror and he was tapping on it with the little, you know, tool. And I was like, oh my God. I said, I don't know. Just like, you know, fill it up and I'll decide later. So he filled it up and it did fix the sensitivity. So I just kind of, you know, put that in the back of my mind. Okay, that's not bothering me. So I'm not going to think about it. And then other weird things I had happened to my body. I had a dream where I was bitten by a spider. And when I woke up and looked in the mirror, I had this incision on my right shoulder, on the back of my shoulder, where that spider had bitten me in my dream. And I would get this weird feeling where something was like a bee sting would happen on that incision. And then I would get a jolt of electricity down my arm and out my fingers. And it would just randomly happen. And so I didn't know where that came from. And I never did a regression to it. Another weird thing I had on my left shoulder one day was a grid mark pattern, like a little square of dots. And it wasn't like needle marks. It was more like, I don't know what it was. It didn't last. It was temporary. The same thing with the little slice. It's not there anymore. The triangle, everything went away, but I got pictures. And so I did do a regression to the tooth with Barbara Lamb. Again, I went back to her and I thought I'd get aliens, you know, I was just guessing. But what happened is I had what they call a military abduction memory. So it was really terrifying. I did not have a blue beam or anything like that. I just remember I was in an exam room on a table, but this time I felt really drugged. Not, hyper alert and immobilized, like with the aliens or whatever they are. But, and I say aliens very loosely. I don't know if these things are computer generated something, if it's a CIA mind control trick, if they're demonic beings, if they're a simulation being. I don't know if they're, I don't know what they are. I don't know if they're from another dimension, another time. I don't know what they are. I'm not, they don't have to be from another planet is what I'm getting at. So they could be from under the earth. They could be from Antarctica. I don't know where they're from. So anyway, in this memory on this table, it was a normal exam room. It was not misty or weird or sci-fi looking. It was just a normal, like a doctor's room. But there were two men in there, not aliens, men. And they were in lab coats and they had black shoes and khaki pants, like some kind of military. I just, you know, like Navy, not saying it was Navy, just saying that's what they were wearing. And the only word I got out of them in this memory was the word troublemaker aimed at me. And then they, one of them put a syringe through my cheek in my memory and squirted something into my jaw at this, where this tooth was. So they did not do something dental. I was not in a dentist chair. I was on a flat table and they just put this syringe into my cheek from the outside and squirted something in there. So then they put me on a gurney, rolled me down a hall, and I ended up in this hangar that was seemingly underground because it had a helicopter in it and the ceiling retracted. And so it was like a dome kind of ceiling or some kind of ceiling that opened up and then there was a lot of daylight. And I remember how bright it was. And I was in this helicopter lying down and they flew up, up, up and took me home to my Silver Lake neighborhood in Los Angeles and landed in this field by my house, which is still a field. I went there recently to see this field, to see if anyone put a house on it or anything. And it's still a field that you can land a helicopter on. And they said, go home and take a nap. And then I came out of the memory. So I don't remember walking home, going in a door, anything like that. And when I came out of this regression, I was so freaked out. And Barbara told me that it was the first time she had ever had a regression with someone that had a military abduction memory. This was in like 1997 as well. So I was terrified. I thought, oh my God, if this is real, this is scarier than the aliens. I mean, aliens are scary, but paramilitary something or other, covert something, something. That's scarier to me. It's more of a betrayal and it's more like unnerving because then you think, God, if I didn't remember this until I went digging around for it because of this dental situation, if this is real, then, you know, what else is real that they've done with me that I don't remember? And then you get totally paranoid, like what the hell? So that was very disturbing. So I continued to go to meetings. I went to Roswell. I had a great trip to the Roswell 1997 50th anniversary. I saw Dr. Mack. Everybody was there. All the greats, that's a lot of them that are no longer with us, were there. And it was very fascinating. I took some photos at White Sands with Don Waldrop. We had gone on this trip together. He was the head of MUFON LA at the time, and he drove me there. And I got UFOs. I should say not a classic UFO. I got light anomalies in these photos that we took in White Sands where I had drawn this big alien face on the sand dune. And I was yelling at the sky like, I dare you to come down here. And we're just screwing around taking these pictures after I drew this big alien face. And in the pictures later, when we developed them, there were these white things, like little squiggly things right in my face where I was looking in two photos. So I'm like yelling at the sky and there's a white squiggly thing right in front of my face. And then I'd look another way and I'm yelling at the sky and there's a white squiggly thing in front of my face in another picture. So that was pretty wild. And, you know, at this time too, I was going to a lot of different healers. I went to this lady, Marie Angelique Raphael, and she did a prayer. She said, you agreed to work with these beings on a soul level and we can sever the contract. And she prayed over me and she prayed to Archangel Michael and Saint Germain. And I went to a ayahuasca healer who had come to LA from Peru, and he did a healing on me that was very powerful. I felt like I was getting an exorcism, and he went and threw up afterward. And I remember saying, is that normal? Is that what you, you know, he goes, oh yeah, I throw up at the end of these clearings because of I'm taking on, you know, what was done to you. And I said, well, what do you think was done to me? And he goes, witchcraft. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, help me. What next? So that, I mean, I just kept going to these different healers, like, you know, to make it stop. And it did stop.
Based in southeast coastal Georgia, Coastal Preparedness Supply is dedicated to helping ordinary folk achieve advanced preparedness and maximum self-sufficiency under any circumstances at affordable prices. Their message is simple: plan ahead before disaster strikes. In these unprecedented times, it's vital to be prepared. Whether it's the looming threat of war or another pandemic, a power outage or even a job loss, you can always be ready to help not only yourself, but friends, family, neighbors, and even strangers as well. Full spectrum preparedness is essential as uncertainty mounts. Coastal Preparedness Supply is here for you. Whether you're new to prepping or well-seasoned, casually interested or passionately devoted, visit coastalprepsupply.com/UFO now to take advantage of a site-wide holiday season discount and use the discount code UFO at checkout for free shipping on selected items, or hit the link below to access this offer. Again, that's coastalprepsupply.com/UFO. Coastal Preparedness Supply, your one-stop shop for all your survival and emergency preparedness needs.
So, for a long time, nothing was happening to me. I was going to Bashar channelings. I had talked to my relatives more. I was trying to piece things together. I had an uncle who worked for NASA. He was a mechanical engineer under Wernher von Braun in the late 60s. He worked on the Saturn V rocket and all these really cool projects at NASA over in Huntsville. And I had lived with him and his family when I was a little kid for a year because I was born to a teenage mom, and I kind of got passed around a little bit. And then I was adopted by my aunt, but I did live with my uncle for a year in Huntsville. And so, you know, I was thinking like, wow, I keep meeting all these abductees in support groups and stuff, and so many of them have relatives in the military or the space industry or, you know, aerospace, intelligence. Am I on a list for this because of this whole biology for technology thing that, you know, this alleged deal that was made back in the day? And I mean, I'm not blaming my uncle. I'm just wondering if him being in NASA had anything to do with me being abducted. Not that he would even know that. So, I asked him about all this, and he said, I don't know anything, and if it's true, it's NSA, and they're never going to tell you. I was like, oh, thanks. But I did have an interesting couple stories visiting him in Huntsville later, you know, as an adult when all this was happening. And one time I remember going there around 2000, some point, ish. I went there a few times, but I'm trying to remember the years. And I went to the gift shop at the Redstone Arsenal, where they have the Space Center, and they had all this NASA stuff you could buy. But when I went there on this particular time, they had all these alien things you could buy at the gift shop. Like, they had t-shirts. I bought a t-shirt. I bought a plastic cup with a straw with an alien on it. They had these figurines. They had a whole wall of figurines. It was like, these are the Nordics. These are the Greys. These are reptilians. These are the Pleiadians. It was like little figurines you could buy. And I remember just being blown away. And then I went back there a couple of years later, like maybe 2002 or something. And I went to the same gift shop, and there was nothing alien. There was not one image of an alien on anything in the store. It was all NASA. And I remember thinking, oh my God, that's really trippy. Like, what if they were going to do disclosure? And then they change their mind or something. That's how my brain works. Like, I was just trying to figure that out. Why would they take all the alien stuff away from the store? So another military person I met this guy, Michael Younger, through my friend Richard Saraday, who was a journalist. Oh, and I started writing for UFO Magazine in 2000, from 2000 to 2004. I wrote for UFO Magazine. I was covering the MUFON meetings and writing other articles. And it was really fun because I got to meet all these experts. And Richard Saraday, who was a UFO journalist and podcaster, introduced me to this guy, Michael Younger, who was supposedly in the Navy, but also was like Delta Force or some kind of like special ops, something or other guy. And we had this very secret meeting in a restaurant, and he listened to my story and he said, yeah, you're the real deal. And he gave me a code name and he called me Angel Fish. And I thought that was weird, and he wouldn't tell me why. But I said, why is the Navy involved in this? And he said, well, the Earth is 2/3 water. And I was like, good point. Now, with what I know about UFOs coming out of the oceans and lakes and things, now that's not as surprising to me, what he said. So, you know, I have a knack for meeting people that tell me very interesting things. When I was acting, I would be on set and I would talk freely. I would talk at parties. It mortified my boyfriend. He was like, God, can't you just not talk about this at parties? It's so embarrassing. It's like you're a born again Christian or something. And which was funny because later I became a born again Christian, but that was later. So I would talk, you know, I have a big mouth. I'm a communicator. But I would get these amazing stories that other people would tell me because I opened my mouth first, right? So I'm on set one day in this trailer with a bunch of girls in bikinis, and we're freezing on this night shoot of a beach party down at the beach. And so they had us in this waiting, this like RV. We had to hang out in there so we wouldn't freeze to death until they needed us. And I'm talking about, you know, UFOs and stuff. And this girl says to me, oh my God, I know what you're talking about. Let's go talk over there. So we go down the hallway and she says, let me tell you this story. She said, I grew up in Maryland and my dad worked for the NSA. He was very high up. And I was like, oh my, okay, keep talking. And she said, okay, so he took me camping when I was a little girl and we're looking up at the stars, sitting around the campfire. And he says to me, what if I told you that God was an alien and this was all just a big experiment? And I was like, whoa, that's really interesting. And I file that away in my brain. You know, that's what I do. I hear all this wild stuff and I file it away and just keep putting the pieces together. So eventually, you know, I looked at my childhood. I was like, did this happen all my life? Am I just like waking up to something that's, you know, are there more clues? And like I said, I had these very severe nosebleeds as a child, which is a symptom. And I would wake up with blood all over the pillow. I had to have my nose cauterized at the doctor. As a child, I had a lot of allergies and respiratory illnesses. I had weird dreams. I had dreams about going into an elevator that went underground. I had dreams about vampires, things like that, very fishy. And in my fears, like in my conscious life as a child, I was terrified of lizards and snakes. Of course, I lived in Louisiana and we had those in the yard. Terrified of praying mantises. Terrified of the Slee Stacks on the Land of the Lost, which was a Saturday morning show for kids. There were these reptilian creatures. I was terrified of the creature from the Black Lagoon. So those are big red flags. Anyway, I just think maybe I had stuff going on as a child, but I was just not aware of it. All of my fears were paranormal too, my general fears. And I remember seeing the Exorcist movie when I was like 13, and it scared the hell out of me. You know, so I had this big fear of being possessed. And I think maybe because she levitated above the bed, maybe that was some kind of trigger. I don't know. I was just so afraid of being possessed. And I was in Catholic school. So I went to Arizona with my husband. Oh, I ended up getting married. I got to tell that story. So I went to England. I went to see the crop circles in 1998. And it was amazing. I went by myself. And I met up with Barbara Lamb, and I wanted to see Sting's house because I was a Sting fanatic, the singer. And he lives right in Wiltshire, England, near Stonehenge, where all the crop circles are. So I had this girl that was in the Sting fan club bring me out there to find his house. He lives in this big, gorgeous house out there. And I saw Sting standing in his driveway, of all things, when this car went through the gate. And he was standing in the driveway. I was like, oh, my God, he's right there. So Barbara and I got together and she said, okay, Camille, we're going to your first crop circle. And I said, hooray. And she said, it just happened last night. So we drove to it and it was kind of misty and drizzly. And I walked into this thing and it was huge. And later when we saw pictures of it from above, they had nicknamed it the stingray. And it looked just like a stingray with a big long tail that curled. And I thought, that is too cool that, you know, I'm obsessed with Sting. And my first crop circle is the stingray. That was like a gift to me. That was just too synchronistic. And so I had this wonderful trip over there, and I had a fling with a guy. You know, of course, I came back home to my boyfriend, and I was like, I'm sorry, but I had a fling in England. And he was like, I'm so glad, because I wanted to break up with you, but I didn't want to be the bad guy. So we broke up, and we were relieved, but, you know, we still cared about each other. And we ended up going to each other's weddings, so it all worked out. But anyway, I met this guy here, Jeff, my husband, in 1998 at a gas station in Malibu. And I had to get gas. I was leaving a UFO field investigator training meeting at the beach, and I was heading to a rehearsal, and it was nighttime, and I had to stop and get gas in Malibu. And I chose this gas station that was right near the gate to the colony where Sting has a house. So that's why I picked that gas station. Anyway, I started talking to this guy next to me getting gas in his motorcycle, because he asked me about my bumper sticker that said, I love England. And he said, what part of England do you love? And I was like, you know, kind of rolling my eyes. I said, Wiltshire. I was just there looking at crop circles, and I thought, he's not going to know what I'm talking about. And he said, oh, my friend Jim Delatoso showed me videos of UFOs making crop circles. What got you into UFOs? And I'm like, oh, they got into me. I was like, you know Jim Delatoso? And I was really impressed, because he analyzed his UFO footage, and he was living in Phoenix, and he was part of the Phoenix Lights analysis. And so we started talking, and he had had this guy at the gas station, my husband, he had had all these UFO experiences. So we swapped business cards, and then we got together and had a date, and here we are. So that was 1998, and we're still together, and we have a son who's grown. And Jeff had a lot of experiences with UFOs too, and still does. He saw two in September in Malibu this year, driving around on his motorcycle. He saw them at night, and they were different. They were different objects, different shapes and everything. Anyway, so, you know, that happened. We got married, and then in 2005, when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, I was so traumatized. I said, I don't want to live in LA. I'm afraid it's going to fall into the ocean. I don't know. I just got really afraid. I had kind of quit acting because we had a son and he was little, and, you know, I was just not into acting. So we packed up and moved to Tucson, and we lived in Tucson for 10 years, and it was really nice. It was very beautiful and inexpensive, and but, you know, had a lot of culture and fun things to do. So we enjoyed it, and they had a very active MUFON and a lot of UFO history there. And they had the Vatican Observatory based at the University of Arizona, and a lot of observatories, and just a lot of famous ufology people live there. Wendell Stevens lived there. He would go to the UFO meetings, and, you know, he wrote all these books about Billy Meyer and the Pleiadians and stuff. And I remember asking him, like, do you trust the Pleiadians? And he said, no. And I said, oh, how interesting. Why? And he said, because they've said things about the future that didn't come true. And I was like, okay, well, there you go. That's a good reason. And Colonel Robert Dean lived in Arizona. Jim Nichols, the artist, illustrator, lived in Arizona. So I was friends with all these people, and it was exciting. And I had a great time there. But then we got bored, and we moved back to LA in 2015. Oh, by the way, while I was in Arizona, I had a major detour in the fact that in, remember 2012 when everybody was, oh, the end of the Mayan calendar, the whole world's going to change, and we were all excited. And then kind of it felt like nothing happened. Well, after that, I had this feeling, we went up to Sedona, and I remember going to see there's a big church, like a big modern Catholic church built into the hill there. And we went in there, and there was this statue of St. Michael the Archangel with slaying a dragon. And I just was very moved by that. And it reminded me of my childhood and going to Catholic school. I went to this really beautiful old school in the country in Louisiana with Salma Hayek, by the way, in eighth grade. And it was called Academy of the Sacred Heart. And it's a very old order of nuns, the Sacred Heart nuns from France, that had settled this school in 1821, I think. And it was gorgeous. I only went there for seventh and eighth grade. It was a girls' school. It was a boarding school, but I was a day student. Salma was a boarding student. But it was so beautiful. And I had my horse there. We had an equestrian program. It was just really great. And then I wanted to go to school with boys in high school, and I left there. But it really made an impression on me. And we had nuns for teachers, and they were really nice. And so anyway, I had been writing my book about this whole alien thing, and I had kind of come to the end, and I still didn't know what it was. And I got really sad, and I was like praying, and I was like, God, can you just reveal to me what this is so I can move on with my life? I don't want to lead anyone astray. And then these books came my way. First, it was Nigel Kerner's book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. And I read that book, and it had this whole section on the Shroud of Turin and how if it was real and Jesus had turned into a light being and risen from the dead and had left this imprint on this shroud that they said had to do with radiation, that it meant he went into a different state. It just really moved me. And I had this whole born again Jesus experience. And it was wild because my husband had told me, he said, you're going to have this spiritual awakening. And I was like, I have those all the time. I was very new age, right, when we were dating. And he said, no, something big. And I was like, okay, whatever. And then that happened, right, a few months later. And he was looking at my astrology. Okay, Jeff, my husband, Jeff Harmon, is an astrologer, like a professional, amazing astrologer. So he was saying that because he saw that in my chart. So when I had this whole born again thing, he was like, wow, I didn't know it would be that. That's pretty wild, you know? And so I started going back to church. I got confirmed, all this stuff. I was going to the Latin Mass. It was really beautiful, really intense. And I was in my happy place. I mean, he was like, how can you go into this little box of doctrine and be happy when you used to be so open-minded? And I said, I think aliens are demons and I'm done. I'm done with it. I just want to go to Mass. It's so beautiful. And I would go to Mass and I would just cry and cry. And then I found out I wasn't in a state of grace and I couldn't have communion and all this, but I would still go. And, you know, I was just in this difficult situation of not being able to be a good Catholic because of my marriage and stuff, but I was really into it. And I was reading all these books about the saints and their mystical experiences, and there were so many parallels to the whole UFO thing. And it fascinated me because I'd never been taught all that in Catholic school, because I went to Catholic school after Vatican II when it was like really kumbaya. And they didn't teach you anything. They didn't teach us the rosary. They didn't tell us any of the cool supernatural stuff about the saints. It was really not a good religious class in the late 70s, early 80s. So anyway, we decided to move back to L.A. and left Tucson, came back to L.A. in 2015, and I started acting again. I was still going to church. I was not into UFOs. Started acting again. I did really well in my acting career, and it really took off. And I was in an Oscar-winning film called Vice with Christian Bale and Steve Carell. I was in Shameless. I was having a good old time, you know, acting in my late 40s and early 50s. And it was really fun and still is. I mean, I'm still an actress. It's just been a hell of a couple of years. So no UFO stuff happening. But then I started going to meetings again here and there. But even if I'd go to meetings, UFO meetings, I would like argue. I'd say, well, what if aliens are demons? No. And everybody was like, whatever. You know, they just, the UFO scene is not into the aliens or demons theory at all. So, but I would still go once in a while. And then really, when I started researching Tartaria stuff, which is a whole subculture about history and looking at history in a different way. And it's about, were there previous resets? Are we in a controlled world where there is a non-human presence that is keeping a lid on a certain narrative of history and creating another, where we have had these previous resets in our history? And it's, I don't want to get too much into it. You can go look into it, but it made me question history and question reality and question the origins of architecture around the world and things like that. And it just really opened my mind again. And I was watching a lot of podcasts about Tartaria. And then I decided to go back to Arizona for the International UFO Congress in the fall of 2022 in Phoenix area. And I had such a great time. Oh, my gosh. I saw all my old UFO friends there, Melinda Leslie, and just all these people, like Lynn Katai was there, everybody. And I was like, oh, man, I'm so back in. And so much had happened that I didn't know about, like the Davis Wilson thing and all this stuff that had happened that I was just not aware of at all. And I got hooked. I was like, okay, I'm back in. This is just too exciting. And I got so excited to be back into it. I felt alive in a different way. And it wasn't like I was totally throwing out the aliens or demons thing. I just opened up again to the possibility that it wasn't that simple. So I started doing interviews. I got invited to speak at UFO Con up in San Francisco. Went up there. I did that. That was great. I met Chris Bledsoe in 2023 in about February when he came here for Alien Con. And I really connected with him and his book. And what I liked about him was he had this religious background, but he had this mystical experience. And he was seeing it as a positive thing. And so I thought that was interesting to me. I reconnected with Yvonne Smith, with Rebecca Hardcastle Wright. I worked with her in some coaching. I discovered Caroline Corey and all of her work and her great documentaries. I went to see her in some conferences. And then I was at church. I was like, I go to church. It's in a tent. It's a long story, but during COVID, we had to move into a big tent in the parking lot. And we got so big that we couldn't fit in our old building. So we still have church in a tent. So I was sitting in this spot where I could see the sky. And it was before Alien Con. And I was nervous about going up there to do this talk. And I said, I had my camera. And I said, okay, this is what I need. I need this before I go do this and get back into this world officially. I said, if you are working with any good beings in the UFOs, I need a sign, please. Please give me a sign. And as soon as I made this prayer, I look up and I see these four white orbs. I think they're orbs. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're birds. I don't know. They're very, very high up in the clouds. Come out and start flying around each other. And I got a few seconds of it on video. And I was like showing everyone, you know, and people were pretty blown away. Some people thought it was spheres. Some people thought it was birds. Chris Bledsoe looked at it and told me he thought it was angels. So I don't know what it was, but to me it was a sign, because the way I figure it, even if it was birds, the symbol of the Holy Spirit is the white bird. And so I was like, even if it's white birds, it's still a sign to me that Jesus was saying, yes, I am working with some good beings in the UFOs. That's how I interpreted it. So I could be wrong, but that's how I interpreted it. So the latest thing that happened to me was Chris had told me, Camille, they're angels and they've been working with you since you were a little girl. Okay. Now that made sense to me because I had had a regression with Barbara years ago that was very wonderful. It wasn't scary. And what had happened was, is I had in 1998, before I went to England, or maybe 97, I know I had it before I went to England because I told someone in England about it, but I had this longing. I kept catching myself saying things like, oh, humans this, humans that. And I felt like I was aligning myself with some beings that were not human and identifying with them in some way. And I went to Barbara and I said, Barbara, I have this longing for these beings that I don't remember. Can we target that? And she said, yeah. So she puts me under hypnosis. And I had this memory of this white hand with the white robe, like touching me through my crib when I was a child, and then taking the hand away from me. And I felt all this separation anxiety and crying. And then the next memory I had was, it was like I was a sofa being stuffed into a pillowcase. And I had like a panic attack and I was screaming, I don't want to be in this body. It's so weak. And I just felt like I had been stuffed into a body. And I was panicking. And she said, well, then go to a place where you felt good. Go there, you know. And so then I pop out and I'm out in space. And I'm a blue light. I'm just a blue light, like a sphere of blue. And I look out across space and I see my friend Nicole and my friend John, and they are blue lights. And I was crying with recognition of seeing my friends in this form. And then I look and there's Earth spinning, and it seemed to be spinning quickly, and it was causing me a lot of anxiety and dread, like being on the edge of a diving board. And I said, I don't want to go to Earth. It's spinning. And Barbara said, why do you have to go to Earth? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, ask someone why you have to go to Earth. And I asked, and then these light beings appeared, these white light beings that were like huge and not spheres. They were more like human form with light all around them so that I couldn't see their faces, but they had arms and legs and some kind of white robes of light. And I was crying with pure ecstasy in the presence of these things. And I felt this meshing with them. And I was saying things like, they're my home. They're my family. That's why I wear a white robe. I had a white bathrobe I was talking about. And I just felt this total oneness, this ecstatic pure love and pure knowledge melding with these things, these angel being, whatever they were. I don't know what they were. They were so beautiful and energy wise. And when I asked them, why did I have to go to Earth? They said, the Earth needs you. And I said, why? And they said, to fight evil. And I was like, oh, okay. What am I supposed to do? And they said, tell people that we exist and that we love them. And I said, okay, how am I supposed to do that? Like lecture about it? Or they said, no, in your acting. And I was like, okay, but you know, most of the stuff that gets made in Hollywood is crap. So they said, don't worry, we will set it up so that you meet people and make projects worthy of your time. And I was, okay, that sounds amazing. Please, yes, please do it. And they gave me this image of this light coming from a central source through the universe, through them. And then they would point this light with their arms at Earth, and it would come out of their arms toward us on Earth. But we were walking around with umbrellas and they couldn't reach us. And they said, we're always here sending you this love. You're just all walking around with umbrellas. And it was this really beautiful image. So I had so much joy in that regression, and I kept pushing them on the acting. They said, the reason you have so many different jobs, all my other jobs, like I was catering and substitute teaching and doing all these weird jobs. I was faux finishing. I was a painter. They said, it's because you like talking to people and telling them your story, but you'll be able to do it on a much bigger scale in your acting. And I was like, okay. So it was weird because when I came out of the regression, I was very happy. And my next acting job was actually a short film in which it was called The Encounter. And it was about a man who had an angelic encounter. And I played his wife. So that was really neat that it was the very next film I did was about an angelic encounter. And then, I don't know. I mean, I hope that I will do more projects that are, you know, beneficial to humanity, because not everything I do is that way, obviously. But that is my goal, you know? And so we'll see how that goes. I'm in this new thing right now that just got formed. It's called Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. And it's a networking group for UFO experiencers and experts to work with Hollywood producers, directors, and writers and others, you know, publicists, agents, things like that, to create content, fiction and nonfiction content that pushes disclosure and helps the world understand this phenomenon from stories based in truth that can be brought to this networking group, right? So I'm straddling both sides. Like, I'm an actress and a UFO experiencer. And we had our inaugural lunch. It was awesome last month. At Musso and Frank, this famous restaurant, it's 100 years old in Hollywood. I was sitting next to this producer who produced Hacksaw Ridge. And I was like, oh my God, there's like some really big people in here. It was so exciting because, you know, being an abductee or an experiencer, whatever you call yourself, it can be so incredibly lonely. And even if you're in support groups, which I was and I still am, where you meet others and you talk about all this and share your stories, in the general public and with your family and your old friends that you had before all this, it can be so isolating and lonely. And you can feel like the biggest weirdo in the family. And it's just been hard. And now that disclosure is really ramping up, there are so many people like me that are so happy to be able to talk about it more freely without being afraid for their, you know, their income, their job security, all that kind of thing. Like, I was so excited to see Goldie Hawn come out and talk about her alien experiences. And I have the same birthday as Goldie Hawn. And then Fran Drescher, who's the head of SAG, who played the nanny, that actress, she had a UFO experience and was abducted. So they, if the head of SAG and if Goldie Hawn can talk about aliens, then so can I. And I told my agent and I told my manager, I said, look, you know, I was talking about this in the 90s and doing interviews, and then I kind of stopped, and now I'm going back in. I'm going to be doing interviews and documentaries and just trying to be a piece of the puzzle and be helpful in this whole disclosure thing, because people need to be able to feel comfortable to talk about it. I have the advantage of being in a career where, you know, as long as you're responsible and you show up and do the work, they're pretty forgiving about weirdness, right? Like, look at Shirley MacLaine. Look at, you know, all these crazy actors who've had drug and alcohol problems. I've never had a drug and alcohol problem. So, you know, I show up, I'm professional, I do my job. It's just very exciting. And I'm really looking forward to the immediate future. I think this is all definitely heading to a giant crescendo of knowledge and information. And it may be scary as hell. Like, what we learn might scare the hell out of us and might really cause some problems in society for a while as we go through this. But I mean, bring it on. I'm so over the secrecy and the wondering. And I just want to know what is really going on. And I want justice for those of us who have had military shenanigans or whatever pseudo-military. I mean, I say military and I shouldn't say that because I don't know if it's really military or some other corporate security something or other operation. I did ask my Navy boyfriend once. I had an old boyfriend who was in the Navy, and I lived with him one summer in Jacksonville. And I remember him taking me to see the F-18s because he worked on the F-18s. And this was before 9/11 when you could bring your girlfriend on the base and everything. And so I called him up and I said, Steve, oh my gosh. Okay, I got to ask you because I just found out I'm an alien abductee. And I just met this Navy guy who's telling me the Navy's involved. And so do you know anything? Like, why did they take people? Like, who do they pick? Like, why me? And he said to me on the phone, he said, all I know is they take people who are very pure. And I thought that was such a weird thing to say. What did that mean? He didn't elaborate. And, you know, he and I were lovers. I know he didn't mean sexually pure. I don't know what he meant. But it was a very weird thing for him to say. And, you know, all of us that have this experience, we go through that why me, and we try to figure it out. Is it because of my blood type? Is it because of my DNA, my lineage? You know, I had read that a lot of people of Irish descent have this, and I have Irish descent. You know, you hear about the negative blood type. I have that. I have the Rh negative blood type. So I don't know. All I know is it seems to be from my mother's side of the family. I asked my mom once if she'd ever had any weird things. And she said, well, I was meditating once and I felt these two claws on my shoulder. And I was like, okay, that counts. That's helpful. Thank you for that information. And then I had the NASA uncle, her brother, and then my grandmother that I adored, who partially raised me. When she was in the hospital, when she was really old, she saw aliens in the hospital and got so upset they had to call her Presbyterian minister to pray with her. And I remember the family got all mad at me and they said, you should have never told her about your alien stuff because now she's hallucinating aliens at the hospital. And I said, you know, I don't know what that was. She was probably on medication. Maybe the veil was lifted because of what drugs they had her on and she could see stuff. I don't know. Or maybe it wasn't drug induced, you know, but I have this suspicion it's through my mother's side of the family. So who knows?
Have an interest in the paranormal? Then you'll love the UnxNetwork.com. The X is your streaming audio and video for everything supernatural, strange, and mysterious, like UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, and so much more. From hosts like Clyde Lewis, Whitley Strieber, Micah Hanks, and Christina Gomez. Visit the UnxNetwork.com show page for a complete list of all the paranormal programs you'll find on the X. Be sure to follow us on Twitter for updates at KUNXDB. Follow our Facebook group, UnX Network. Find the podcast on Spotify, iHeart, Audible, and Apple Podcast. It's time.
It's new.
It's the X. X. X.
you know, I just wanted to talk more about all these weird clues along the way. You know, like that girl that said her dad worked for the NSA and all that. I do know that I have this gift. People ask abductees a lot of times, like, do you have psychic abilities? Do you have the ability to heal people? Like, did they activate some kind of an ability with you? The only thing I've discovered about myself in that manner is I have this ability to find other abductees in the room. We find each other and we talk. And I can go to a party and find the person in the room that's had this experience. And that has caused me to believe that this experience is very common. Now, I don't know if that's my imagination because I just happened to vibrate towards the person in the room that had the experience. It just seems to me like there are a lot of people. Because I open my big mouth, I hear their stories back. And they would have never told me their story if I hadn't said something first. Another interesting thing, when I first went back to the church in Tucson, this one church, not the Latin Mass, but this other one that I had first gone back to, and I went to confession, and I was telling the priest everything in confession. And he told me to slow down and not go so fast with my plans to, you know, go back to church and everything. And I remember wondering why he told me that. And then I remember contacting this guy, Brother Guy Consolmago, at the Vatican Observatory in Tucson, and telling him, you know, my understanding that the Vatican was very interested in the subject matter, and that as an abductee, I had come to this theory that aliens were demons and I wanted to go back to the church and all this. And he told me I was on the right track, which is interesting because the Vatican's been very interested in all this. Now, they're an organization, they want self-preservation, and they're going to shape the narrative to preserve themselves and their doctrine. You know, there's a very interesting book that came out by Dr. Paul Thigpen, who is a Catholic writer, and it came out last year, published by Tan Publishing, which is a Catholic publisher, and it was all about the extraterrestrial reality and the Catholic Church. What does the Church say about this, do about this? It's a very good book. Actually, I don't have the exact title, but I should have it. But anyway, Dr. Paul Thigpen, Thigpen, you can look it up. So even though the Catholic Church has, believe me, its own problems with corruption and, you know, pedophilia and everything else, they have done a lot of wonderful things, and they are very open-minded about the subject, I will say. So I guess they're like, their perspective is, if there are aliens from other planets, how do they fit into the redemption narrative? If Jesus redeems the sinners on earth who had original sin with Adam and Eve, how does that apply to other beings on other worlds where they didn't have Adam and Eve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So that's a very interesting thing to ponder. But there were mystics throughout time. Swedenborg, he wasn't Catholic, but he was a mystic that talked to beings on other worlds. The Mormons believe in other worlds. There are a lot of religions that incorporate beings from other worlds, the Hindu religion, the Muslim religion. So I think it doesn't have to totally destroy religion, but I think the religions are going to have to assimilate this disclosure reality, whether these beings are from other worlds that are in space or other worlds that are in other dimensions. Either way, they're going to have to deal with the non-human entity reality that they have, you know, the ability to categorize as angelic or demonic or something else, Nephilim, whatever. So I think the way religion handles this is going to be very interesting. Another thing that happened in my childhood that made me think, wow, what an amazing synchronicity, is I had my first job at an ice cream shop called Swenson's with a girl who was very smart, and her father was a professor at the University of Southwestern Louisiana, where I eventually went to college in Lafayette, Louisiana. And he was famous because he had discovered Planet X, this guy, her dad, John Matisse, M-A-T-E-S-E. And I knew that about him. This was in the 80s, and I knew that about him. I knew he was famous for that. But I wasn't into aliens or space or anything back then. So now I think back, and I'm like, what if Planet X is coming? What if Nibiru and all that is happening? And what if these elites that are trying to wrangle us into this tyrannical world, this WEF transhumanist enslavement. What if they're doing that because they know that something's coming, that they're trying to strategize for themselves and take out a lot of us and enslave the rest before it happens? Like if it's a rogue planet, a comet, some kind of, you know, disaster related thing, extinction level event kind of a thing. So I don't know. I don't know what's happening. All I know is that I went to this girl, Mary Matisse's house, and her dad was John Matisse, who discovered Planet X. I think that's really cool. So I just really feel like my whole life has been putting this puzzle together, and I didn't even know it until I look back. Another influential person I met was David Icke in 1997, I guess. He came to LA to speak at an expo. I think it was the Whole Life Expo back then. And I didn't know who he was, and I was volunteering there at a table, and he came up the stairs on this mezzanine level of the hotel, and he had such a presence when he walked up the stairs. And I mean, he didn't even speak. He just entered the room, and I was, oh my God, who is that person? It's like he had an invisible army with him. And he went over to the speaker check-in table, and I couldn't hear what was happening. But when he walked away, I went over there and I said, who was that guy? Who was that guy? And they said, David Icke, he's giving a talk in such and such a room. And I said, can I be the room monitor in there? And they said, okay. And they signed me up to be the room monitor. So I was the one checking people's tickets or wristbands or whatever. And I got to watch him do his presentation. And he had this book out, And the Truth Shall Set You Free. That was the book he was promoting at the time. And I was blown away by him. And I got the book, and then, you know, that book blew my mind. So it was about the reptilians and all that. And then later, I, through UFO Magazine, I got to interview Arizona Wilder, who was one of the people David Icke mentioned as being a survivor of satanic ritual abuse. And she and I met in this park in Malibu, Las Virgenes Park. And we sat at a picnic table and I interviewed her. And I remember I was so scared of her because of her story. It was just so terrifying. And I was like, I don't really want to be alone with this poor lady in this park, you know? I mean, I really didn't want her story to be true, because if it was true, it was so terrifying. I don't even think I wrote the article. I think I just interviewed her, and I wasn't brave enough, or maybe the magazine wasn't brave enough to do the article. I've just met so many interesting people through this phenomena, living here in LA and then when I was in Arizona as well. But we will have to see how it all shakes out. I, at this point, I'm busy acting. I'm busy, you know, helping my husband with the astrology business. And I still go to church once in a while, not as regularly. And I still pray. And I just am waiting. I'm waiting, and I'm speaking. I'm looking for answers like everyone else, and I really do think it's coming to a head, so I wish us all the best. The latest experience I've had was Chris Bledsoe saying, Camille, why don't you just say, Dear God, I'm willing to work with your angels and see what happens. And so I went outside, and I just looked at the sky, and it was at night, and I was praying, okay, God, I think I'm brave enough to work with your angels, but not anything scary, just like the light beings, please. And I said, and I'm so scared. You can show up as a UFO or come to me in my dreams. But if you come to me in my face right here in the yard, I think I'll have a heart attack. So please don't do that right now. And I heard this owl hooting. And owls figure a lot in this phenomenon as messengers and screen memories and all kinds of things. That night I went to bed, and I was trying to sleep, but I couldn't sleep because Jeff was keeping me awake. So I went into the guest room, and I was sleeping in there. And I woke up from this dream. I was having a dream where something was in the bed in the guest room with me, touching my neck, poking at my neck. And I thought, oh my God, are they here? And I was afraid, and I was too afraid to turn around and look. I was facing the closet. And the way they were touching me was like a doctor. It wasn't like sexual. And I said, oh my God, are you here to heal me? If you are, that's great. And when you're done, could you go down the hall and heal Jeff? You know, I mean, cause we're both, you know, I'm in my late 50s. He's in his early 60s. We got some ailments, nothing big. But, and then in this memory, I got brave enough to turn around and look at whoever was touching my neck. And when I turned around, I saw these two guys, like humans, with dark hair and beards, and they were Caucasian. They stared at me blankly, like with no emotion. And then I came out of the memory, or I woke up or whatever. And so I don't know what that was, but it was weird. And I remember texting Chris the next day and saying, Chris, do you think that was real? Because, you know, it was right after I made that prayer. And he said, it does seem like it might be real because you slept in the guest room. Like maybe they caused the disturbance that made you go in the guest room so that they could have you alone and work on you. I was like, yeah, maybe. I don't know. It was weird. Anyway, so I don't know what's in store for me. I'm coming out in a couple of documentaries this, I guess, early 2024. One with Caroline Corey called Closure. And one is a new show for the CW called The Alien Disclosure Files. You know, I have some acting stuff on the going on as well. And then I'm also going to be in a new show with Dan Aykroyd on the History Channel, just as a reenactor. I got hired to do a couple of reenactment segments on this new show called The Unbelievable with Dan Aykroyd. They pick interesting subjects that were mysterious and they reenact them. So anyway, I'm going to be in a couple of those, but I just keep acting. And I know that I'm booked in a series about fighting child trafficking, which is really awesome. So I hope that that gets going soon because everything was on hold due to the strike. So there are some things coming up that are amazing projects that I'll be involved with if everything goes well and happens. I just keep trying to do my mission here, which is to be a communicator, I guess. I just am going to use my acting and my speaking ability to tell my story or be in projects that tell stories. You know, be useful in that way, because that seems to be what I do. I don't know what else to do. I don't have a science brain. I have an artist brain.
Fascinating stuff, Camille.
Thank you.
So many strange connections.
Well, that's what I think is the most interesting.
You know, when we talk about military abductions, now, obviously, it's known as MILABs, MILLABs, military abductions. And a lot of time, we're not really talking about the military in general, but it's more to do with contractors and off-the-record projects.
Right.
Because it is something which turns up time again in plenty of my guests. And there is a very dark side to it. It's interesting that you said about a dream that you had back in 1991 at the Rockstar House.
Yeah.
You don't remember if it actually was a rock star or...
No, it wasn't any rock star that was an actual person that I knew from, you know, pop culture or anything. It just seemed to be a generic representation of a rock star. I wouldn't say that it was anyone I would recognize as a person in real life.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting. It's just very strange that we have this connection with the MILABs, with the alien abductions, with the human abductions, and we have this connection to Satanism, which is something which comes up time and time again. It's very peculiar, and it's something which isn't talked about enough, I don't think. You know, when people hear it, they're kind of making it up. But unfortunately, this is something which happens, and it's been happening for a very long time.
That's why I bring it up, because even though I have no conscious memory of being involved in anything like that, that one dream was so disturbing, and it had that physical effect on my, you know, feeling like I was being attacked spiritually through my solar plexus. And then you read about all this stuff going on in the world, and you're like, oh my God, that's really scary, you know, and it seems to be real. And, you know, you hear rumors about all these things being related. That's what's scared me the most about the MILAB memory, because it just, when you bring in the human element, it's just frightening to think that anyone could have control over your life and compartmentalize your life in a way that you don't remember things. Because that opens up such a huge can of worms. It's terrifying.
You know, when it comes to aliens, something you can kind of work with. But you're right, when you add in the human element, it seems to be that they're taking so much more. These people which in these positions, they should be the one protecting you.
Yeah.
Pay your tax dollars to. They're supposed to look after you, look after security. But they seem to be doing this on the nation's people.
Yeah.
It's scary because then, it brings into the whole MK Ultra and mind control. And then that in turn connects to child trafficking and human trafficking.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to me, I see the human trafficking problem as the greatest well, one of, there's so many now, it's like you can't even stack them all in order of evil, but that's so massive. Oh, here's another weird thing that relates to that, right? So I was going to this church, the Latin Mass here in LA, at this church. We're in another building now in the tent, you know, but before that we were at the church in West Hollywood as kind of a guest organization in their building. Oh, okay, so the director of Sound of Freedom and the actor in Sound of Freedom who plays the wealthy guy who finances the sting operation. In other words, Alejandro Monteverde, who's the director, and Eduardo Verastegui, I think that's how you say his last name. He's the actor who's now running for president of Mexico. Eduardo is. They both were going to my church sometimes, and I met them and talked about Sound of Freedom when they were filming it. And I was so excited about it. And, you know, I knew that was real as a problem. I had been following Operation Underground Rescue with Tim Ballard and all that. And I was so excited for them. And then the movie took so long once they filmed it to come out. You know, there were all these problems with getting it out into the world. And I was so happy when it finally came out. And I remember, too, this is a funny story. When COVID hit and everything shut down, right? I was on to that. Like, I knew from the beginning. I was like, this is some kind of scam, right? I'm not afraid of this. And I wouldn't get the you know what. And I went out and I was like, I'm not going to sit in my house and be afraid. I'm going to go work. So I got a job doing DoorDash, like delivering food, right? Because I was like, I literally cannot sit in my house and do nothing. I'm going to go crazy. So I was delivering food to people in this nice part of town, Thousand Oaks. And there are a lot of wealthy people out there. And it's really pleasant and beautiful. And, it's, you know, it's easy to park and everything. So I knew Jim Caviezel lived out there. I knew Gary Sinise lived out there. And I was like, you know, my dream is I'm going to deliver some kind of food to Gary Sinise or Jim Caviezel. That's my goal while I'm doing this crazy job. That's my dream. So one day I'm driving around delivering food and I see this guy on the side of the road next to a motorcycle and he's talking on his phone. And I look, I mean, I drive and I look and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And it was Jim Caviezel. It was Jim Caviezel standing on the side of the road talking on the phone next to a motorcycle. And I remember thinking, that is too weird. And I went home and I Googled Jim Caviezel and motorcycle and all these pictures came up. And sure enough, he rides motorcycles. And I was like, yep, that was him. And then I ended up bringing a pizza to Gary Sinise's house. It was like, see, I'm able to manifest meeting these people that I've met Sting many times. Anytime I get really attracted to some person and I want to meet them, I meet them. I've met Mel Gibson. I've met Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, anyone that I met, Rutger Hauer, like Shirley MacLaine, all these people that I would have a thing for and be very interested in, I would meet them. So it's just interesting. The power of intention is real. And that's what I'm trying to learn, is like to not be in fear and to change my vibration and all this and, you know, vibrate a better reality for myself. That's what I'm working on. It's really hard because my nature is very detective-like and, you know, I'm always looking at dark stuff. But I'm trying to control my thoughts. Like, I have to balance all this dark stuff, right? I mean, don't we all? Golly. So I have to go and like listen to, you know, positive music and go out in nature a lot and stuff like that. Go to the gym. Because otherwise, I mean, it's just crazy times that we're living in.
You know, I think we're more in control of our realities than we realize. I think we have a habit of boxing ourselves in. We are capable of so much more.
We are. And it's just been a wild ride. I mean, even all the little jobs I had, you know, like catering, I would be working in these mansions and these big Hollywood parties and seeing all this stuff. And I was coming at it like a conspiracy theorist, right? Every time I would be in a situation, I did presidential dinners. I had to follow Chelsea Clinton around with a silver tray with a Diet 7-Up on it for 2 days. I was in the room with Clinton, all these people. And Clinton and Kevin Spacey at Rob Reiner's house, by the way. So, you know, I was like always thinking like a David Icke reader. I'd be in some house with some fancy director and I'm like, oh my God, he's got a Masonic black and white checkerboard floor and he's got this and he's got that. And look at his book. I was such a spy. I was just always like keeping my eyes open, putting together the pieces.
You know, you work in Hollywood and, you know, it's known as being Holly Weird.
Yeah.
Do you find because you are an outsider, because you weren't born... You weren't born in California, you weren't born in LA, you weren't born into it.
Right.
Do you think it's different for you? Do you notice that strangeness?
I have heard stories. I mean, even if you're not born into it, if you come here and you climb the ladder, you know, eventually you get approached by the cult, basically, is what I keep hearing. And I'm like, I don't want to ever get to that point. I don't want to be so famous that I get roped into the cult. You know what I mean? I don't mind being a very low-level actor. For that reason, I talked to a makeup artist girl who said that she's been approached several times to literally sign a paper to sell her soul for a product line and turned them down. So, you know, I don't ever want anyone bringing me to some party and drugging me and getting me to sign a paper to sell my soul. Right. So I'm very cautious about my career, I guess, is the best way I can put it. And I do try to, you know, be savvy about things like that. Because I would rather, you know, quit, move away than get myself in any kind of situation like that, obviously.
Of course. I mean, I'm friends with Shia LaBeouf and I've asked him, but he won't talk about anything like that at all.
Well, that's very interesting. He's such a fine actor. And he's, you know, he had this father from Louisiana where I'm from. And then he just he played Padre Pio and had this big Catholic conversion. So I'm very interested in him. I really loved his film, Honey Boy. It was very moving. So quite spectacular, actually. So that's interesting that you know him. So I you know, I try to find people that I think are good people and contact them or get to know them. I mean, like sitting next to this guy in this meeting at the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance and finding out he, you know, he produced Hacksaw Ridge. I was like, wow, I love Mel Gibson. That's great. Wow. You know, and even saying you love Mel Gibson is like a, you know, could get you canceled in this town. So it's just very complicated, as you could imagine.
Yeah, no, I agree. Actually, when you're in the UK, you're in Wilkshire. Mm-hmm. And now that is just,
I was.
That's just 10 miles away from where I'm from. I spent time down in Wilkshire because when I was researching back in the mid-90s, we would go down to the crop circles down there.
Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, Gloucestershire, a lovely part of the world. And as for Sting, now, I had a guest on and he was a photographer in LA. He'd tell me about when he was working with Sting and all that kind of stuff. And we were recording on Skype like we are now. Mm-hmm. And when we finished, none of this stuff is connected up to my Facebook or my phone or anything. And then for the next week, all I got was adverts for Police albums and Sting albums and you name it.
That's so weird.
It's so strange. Just goes to show the mic on your phone.
Well, you know, and I'm so paranoid about mind control and CIA and everything. Like even knowing that Stuart Copeland's brother and father were in the CIA in the Middle East, and he grew up in the Middle East, made me wonder when I read Preston Nichols' book about using mind control through music and the music industry.
Yeah.
It made me think, I wonder if they put mind control frequencies in the Police albums to make me fall in love with Sting and buy more records. But you know, when you know that they can do that, then it makes you wonder, like, has that been done for this band that has CIA connections? It makes you wonder.
That is true. And it wouldn't surprise me. But then again, you know, Police were a great band.
Exactly. So you're like, were they just awesome or did they have an extra advantage in some kind of secret technology? Who knows?
Well, I'm sure, you know, a lot of these musicians, they do try and experiment with different things to see how they can, you know, kind of get a foothold, I'd imagine.
Who knows? I just don't trust anything. I have such trust issues. It's ridiculous.
Oh, you don't need to tell me. And there is certainly an interest with abductees, contactees. I think a lot of it is they want to know how and why people are being connected with extraterrestrials or interdimensions or whatever. There is definitely a big interest. So when it comes to all this disclosure, it's very strange because if we have full disclosure, then obviously this stuff will eventually come out because there's only so long the truth can be hidden.
Right. And what I wonder is, well, you know, they're always going to shape the narrative in some way. And will we ever get the real truth? And will we ever have justice for people who were criminally acted upon? Because it would be nice. I mean, if I'm on a list as a MyLab target and that list is discovered and there's some kind of class action thing. That would be really nice. Just saying, to have justice, you know.
I completely agree with you. The biggest problem is, and what you see in with Epstein and all that, you know, the reason why it's not coming out is because there's too many people involved, and these people, they have so much control. They're able to control what goes out. So,
I know.
Very strange times.
Very strange, very interesting times.
You know, like you've done with yourself, you know, it's important that people come out and share these experiences, because there is so many. There is so many I can't personally keep up. And the more people come out, then that brings, you know, I'd have a guest on and I'd then bring another five people out. You know, I heard so-and-so on the show, you know, now I'm ready. Just yesterday, I got contacted by a woman and she was very nervous. And it's been nearly a year and a half since she first contacted me. And she said, the more I hear, the more, you know, I want to come forward.
Well, I was just talking to a girl before I got on the call with you, because she happened to call me because she's has interesting stories and things happening to her in Kentucky. And I was telling her, I said, you should check out this podcast I'm about to do, because they have a forum where you can submit yourself to be a guest and, you know, could do it. And you don't have to be on camera. You could even use a fake name, I guess, if you want, if you're that nervous, because she has never gone public, but she's a nurse. And so I can tell her that she can go onto your forum and put in a submission to be a guest.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not on YouTube for obvious reasons. The reason why I use predominantly audio is because it gives people a chance to share it and not have to worry about what their friends, family, or even peers finding out. Because I do have a lot of people from that have scientific backgrounds and have some very professional careers, which are completely indifferent from this subject. It's more important that we hear these accounts. Sometimes we do change names and it makes people feel a little bit more comfortable. You know, the more the merrier.
Great. I'll tell her how fun it was, and that it's, you know, something she can do if she gets brave and wants to do it. And I'll tell others too. You know, I go to all these support groups and stuff.
Yeah, please do that. Because you're a very confident and open person, people gravitate towards you. And then when you're sharing these stories and then they bring out their stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fortunate because I can go to a barbecue or a bar, whatever, and then someone asks me what I do, and I tell them, and then before I know it, they're then telling me about their experiences.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. So I tell people, you know, don't worry about people looking at you like a crazy person. Talk to people about it. In fact, you know, the first time you meet someone, say to them, you know, have you ever seen a UFO or a ghost?
Yeah.
You'll be surprised what people will tell you.
Exactly. Yeah. I should have my husband do a show because he's seen a lot of UFOs. He had telepathic encounters with them. He was chased by one on his motorcycle that stalled his motorcycle and he had to sleep at the neighbor's. And then the next day it started up fine. He used to see them coming out of lakes in Wisconsin. When he was a kid, he grew up in way northern Wisconsin. He saw Bigfoot up there too once. So he's seen a lot of things. Yeah.
Well, Camille, you know, I don't just cover UFOs. I cover just about everything.
Cool.
You give Jeff that link, and when he's got time.
Okay.
Camille, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Oh, I had a wonderful time. Thank you so much. It was great. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Take care of yourself. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you've had an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Camille for sharing tonight, and as always, thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe. And keep watching the skies. Goodbye.